Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, we have a very special guest today, Chet McDonald. This is a man who has had experience in life that most of us will not experience, but the message that he shares and the significance of the way that he's living his life, I think is just phenomenal. Chet, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I have been just so impressed with your story, and I have in front of me your book, All He Needs for Heaven. You are an adorable kid. Because your picture's right on the front cover. You were just a little doll. And it looks to me like you still have that same happy face and still have the same batch of good looks that you had then. It's just become a little bit more refined. Now, I want my audience to know a little bit about you, Chet. You were born without arms and with shortened legs. You are traveling around the country, talking with people. And your journey has been a fascinating one because your dad put together, whose name is Jim, he put together this book along with you. And I wanted to ask you a question.
Okay.
Why is it that there is so much ignorance about people with disabilities? You were born with this, without the arms. What is it that's so challenging for a family when this occurs?
You know, I think that it comes with, everybody has that perfect dream. Everybody has the idea that their child will be perfect. I have a 10-month-old of my own, and when my wife and I were dreaming of what she would look like before she was born, we certainly didn't envision a handicapped child in our dreams. And I think that's what my parents went through. That was the part that was so difficult for them, was that they literally had to, as one person suggested to them, bury a dream and go on with what reality had brought them. And in turn, from that very bleak situation, have a wonderful life with a family and a home and a business, and I couldn't ask for more.
I agree with that. Now, you graduated magna cum laude from the University of North Texas in 2002. You've got a Bachelor of Arts degree, majoring in radio, television, and film production. You have your own travel agency. You're married, you have a beautiful daughter, Hannah, and your story, I think, is so powerful because it's not just about you, it is about your family. It is about a family unit that together decided they were going to take on a challenge. And this was something nobody had any idea, including the doctors, that there was going to be anything different about this baby, did they?
That's correct. You know, in 1979, when my mother was pregnant with me, they didn't do sonograms like they do today, where you go for several times in the term of a pregnancy. So the doctors didn't know anything was wrong, and the pregnancy was progressing just as it normally would. I'm the third child in my family, so when the doctors found out, right about the time that my mom went into labor, that I was going to be born breech, they just said, well, it's your third child, you should be fine. I mean, a concept that today would be so foreign to the medical community back then was just, well, this is, everything will be okay. When I started to be born, complications came about because I was being born breech, and as I'm told, I nearly died, and so did my mother. Had it not been for a very skilled and very brave obstetrician, neither one of us would be here. So to come from that, and you can imagine in that situation in the hospital room, just total utter despair.
Mm-hmm.
My mother even, for years and years and years, both my parents, I've seen psychiatrists and counselors, and are to the point now where they can easily see the positive side of things. But for those first few weeks and those first few months, you know, they've told me before, what do you do with a kid that doesn't have arms?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the description that you have in your book, your dad had to tell your mom
mm-hmm.
that you had no arm on the right side, a short stub on the left, and short legs as if the thigh section was missing, and she was in such bad shape, as you've just said, she had to have surgical repair,
mm-hmm.
but she let you and your, or they let you and your mom bond
mm-hmm.
for about a while, and then you were put to the side because they had to work at saving your mother's life.
Yes, very much so.
And so then your dad, I mean, this book is so special because your father puts in his feelings, and when you think back to the 70s, men usually were not allowed anywhere close to women when they were having babies.
Right. Right. He had been through the Lamaze process, and that was kind of the golden ticket at that time, to get to be with your wife when she was giving birth instead of her being wheeled away and you being told to wait in a delivery room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in a waiting room.
Mm-hmm. So like you said, we're in an entirely different world today. And you had a lot of support with friends and family, and of course when the word went out about your birth and the difficulties and the challenges that you were obviously going to be dealing with and all of this, everybody that found out about it really, really were right there for
mm-hmm.
you and your family. And your dad had a lot of people come up with some pretty cruel comments at different times. And one of the things that he did, he said he didn't blame God for the way you were born, which I thought was quite commendable because so many times people would do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do that. And that's something that throughout his book, it's a story about people who said love is more important. They had total, total belief in you and in your capabilities as an individual. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And your mother really expected you to do things. She didn't want to treat you as if you were no brain kind of an individual.
Mm-hmm. I was told from the very beginning, as early as I can remember my parents saying, you're no different than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might look different, but you are no different. And that concept has stayed with me, and those words have given me hope and strength throughout my life. And their choice to raise me as an independent being with thoughts and with the ability to experience life to the fullest has really allowed me to get to the point where I am today.
Well, I think it's marvelous. Now, I'm aware of a woman who was born without arms. And she was able to develop the use of her feet so effectively. There's been a few people that have done this.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, had a baby. She drives a car. She does all kinds of things. And when I was reading your story, your family said, we want to look at ways that we can empower you so that you can have a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a CBARCS occupational therapist. And what is a CBARC, a C-B-A-R-C?
It actually stood for the Cato-Bossier Parish, because Cato-Bossier Association of Retarded Citizens, which, again, we're talking about 1980, where
mm-hmm.
We weren't quite as politically correct as we are today, and, you know, things kind of got lumped under one label or one term. In fact, when the director of the organization came to my dad and said, you know, this is what we do, we can help your son. His first reaction was, well, but there's no indication that there's anything wrong with my son's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the man smiled and said, well, but we have therapists and we can, I mean, this is what we do. And so while that may be kind of an archaic term, the help that they provided was immeasurable. And my parents like to laugh about it and say that, really a lot of the therapy was for them to be able to, you know, the therapist would tell them, this is what your son's going to be able to do, and it was kind of putting their mind to ease. And mm-hmm. then they said they would set me down, and I'd go right to it without any kind of prodding or help in that regard.
Right. Now, you were able, you started getting your therapy at 3 months of age,
mm-hmm.
and they continued to work with you until you were almost 3 years old, which is quite interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So you were really encouraged to be independent and to learn about how to use your feet and to just do things a little differently than everybody else did.
Absolutely. It was never a case of you can't. It was always a case of find a way to be able to do it. You can do it. It's just going to take a different path. And
mm-hmm.
that's what has been kind of a guiding force in my life up until even when my wife was pregnant with our daughter, somebody came up to us and said, well, you're going to have to get one of those baby slings that you can put around your neck so that you can nuzzle your daughter up against your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And the person meant well by it, but after they walked away, I said, well, then how would I hold her? Because I hold her with my feet. I hold
mm-hmm.
her in my legs. And
mm-hmm.
so what a lot of people don't realize when they do try to help, when they do try to offer advice, is it's not what it looks like with everybody else. I can't hold my daughter up against my chest, but there are many, many other ways to bond with her. And I dare say that I'm somewhat better at that than other parents who have arms who can do that, because they take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. Now, one of the things I thought that was so interesting, too, is that you your family came to know a Dr. Richard King,
mm-hmm.
and he was the one that told them that you'd be able to walk,
yes.
which just absolutely amazed them. I mean, here are these people in that time frame that didn't say, well, you know, put your kid away in an institution somewhere because he's just not going to have any possibility of having any value in life. And instead, here are these people who are saying, hey, this kid can do this and this kid can do that. Yeah, maybe he doesn't have the arms, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he's going to be able to do.
That's exactly
right. That is phenomenal.
In fact, so many doctors had told them that I wouldn't be able to walk because, as my dad's description, that it looks like my thigh section is removed. I don't have a femur bone in my right leg and a very small one in my left leg. But neither connection goes up into my pelvic joint. So that between my pelvic bone and my legs is sheer muscle mass. There's nothing else there. There's no bone structure there. And so in looking at that on an x-ray, it looks like my legs are basically disconnected from my body. And so I shouldn't be able to walk in so many doctors' minds. And then when
mm-hmm.
they went to this specialist who literally, that I was the only type of patient that he saw was what's called limb deficiency. And he was talking along very casually and said, well, when he starts to walk, you all need to be concerned about that. And said, both of my parents' eyes went huge and the doctor turned and said, oh, nobody's ever told you he could walk, huh?
Oh, I just love it. See, and that is what I think is so important, and it's one of the major things that I feel comes out in this book, is that there are those people that work in environments and have experiences, as this doctor did, saying, we don't have to put limitations. Yes, there are already limitations physically that are there, but let's work with what we've got,
mm-hmm.
and let me tell you what I've learned, and this is what you can do. I think that is fabulous. That, to me, it's a message of hope and inspiration for those that maybe know of someone who has become disabled or maybe is born in some way with a limb deficiency. This doesn't mean it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It means that you're different. That's all.
Absolutely. We've met so many people in speaking and just even, you know, in public, maybe even on vacation, that have said that just being able to see what I can do and how to live a positive life even when you don't have a whole body, how that really impacts especially those who were born with a disability or who have family members who were as well. It's, you know, my message is to give hope. It's not a sad life. It's a happy life.
Right, and a very fulfilling and purposeful life.
Absolutely.
I had to chuckle because I at the age three, your family had to get you a powered wheelchair, and at that time it cost over $6,500, which is a big chunk of change to have to deal with. But at 3 years of age, that gave you a lot of freedom. I think of most parents that have children that are 3 years old, that's the last thing they'd want their kid to have, because it's all they can do to keep up with them as it is.
That's right. That's right. In fact, one of the stories my dad likes to tell is right around that age, I had just learned how to use the chair and use it effectively. Maybe around four or five, I was in the back of the church building where he was a minister at, and I was playing chase with several friends. And just like kids on legs, I'm looking all around me, looking over my shoulder to see who's chasing me. And as I turned a corner, I looked over my shoulder and ran right through a sheetrock wall.
Oh, just what every parent loves to see.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. So,
oh,
I mean, it's that same thing of I was a normal kid just like any other kid. I got into trouble. I got into dumb situations just like every kid did, except I was driving a 300-pound wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. Boy, did you have an ace. That's amazing. Now, there's a picture of you playing football with your cousin Joey, which is just fabulous. And one of the statements that your dad says in the book is that they told you that the world doesn't owe you anything, that it does not owe everyone else. And they wanted you to be able to do for yourself whatever you possibly could do and wanted you to have a full life. What a wonderful attitude for a family to have. Wow, that is pretty powerful.
You know, it's one of those things that I look back on now and I'm so grateful for, because I see so many people, not necessarily with disabilities, but just so many people that feel like the world owes them something. Maybe they've been put through a hard time, or maybe they do have a disability, and with that attitude of demand and all about me, I really feel like you don't get to experience life as it was meant to be experienced. I think that with the attitude of, you know what, I can go out and serve others even with a disability, that's when I'm allowed to really experience what it means to be human and what it means to live a full life.
Well, there are just such fabulous photos in your book about yourself, your family, you're playing games with your nieces and your nephews sitting on the living room floor, you know, as you became an adult. Wonderful picture with you and your dad and other members of your family. Your dad sometimes was quite concerned about you being able to defend yourself, because as you just mentioned, you got into mischief just like everybody else did. But you knew how to use that wheelchair as a defensive mechanism.
Yeah, actually the guy that put the wheelchair together for me was, he had a run-in with some thugs kind of at a alleyway, and they tried to mug him, and he wound up breaking one of them's ankles, and I think something about the guy's one ankle and then the other side of his body, the foot or something, to where he couldn't get away until the police came. And so, which I think is absolutely hysterical such a situation where thugs would pick on somebody that they thought was defenseless and wound up with broken bones. That's got to have some irony in it. But
the police officers must have loved that.
Oh, I would have loved to have been there. But one of the things one of the first lessons kind of in driving the chair and was, if anybody comes up to you and tries to get you or even touches you in a way that you're uncomfortable with, you have full permission to slam it into them and get them out of your way. And so I never felt fearful. In fact, my wife thinks I'm a little bit fearless in some public situations, and it doesn't happen hardly at all. But if there is a situation where I feel danger, I really feel like, you know, I have the upper hand in the matter, because the chair is just so heavy and so able to keep me safe. In fact, one time in junior high, a bully and I had exchanged words several times, and finally he decided, he called for a fight. And so, you know, the crowd gathered, and just like you see in the movies, and he asked me to get out of my wheelchair so he could fight me. And I said, "You're crazy. I'm going to use this thing to break your ankles before you even throw a punch." And he looked at me, and looked at the ground and said, well, you're not worth it, and walked off, to which the crowd applauded. But, you know, it was one of those things of, man, if you get to use your arms, I get to use this. So,
mm-hmm. Very interesting. Good strategy. Now, you had a very high IQ. Your family ended up going to Texas. You were an honor program student. You just really did well. And then you met a wonderful man, Eddie Kelleher. Tell us about Eddie.
Eddie was he actually made my second wheelchair. He was a retired policeman, and who had been disabled in the line of duty. And what he decided was he would take basically what amounted to a pension, and use that to build wheelchairs out of his home and provide them at a much cheaper rate, still with you know, good quality chairs. And so when my first wheelchair, which I used until the age of 11, started burning motors and really, wearing out, then Eddie was the guy we went to, and he built my second chair, which that was really beneficial because, you know, it was not quite so expensive.
Now, a van was adapted for you, which was very costly. It was, what, $60,000 to make the adaptations on the van so that you could have the mobility you wanted?
Yes, yes. When I was in college, my degree program required an internship with a radio station or a TV station or a film company, and I was focusing on radio, and so I chose a radio station in Dallas, and the state of Texas, who had been putting me through college, they paid for all of my tuition, room and board, everything, because I fit in a category called catastrophically handicapped, which means that daily life functions are impaired. They have their own lingo. I was fine with it because it meant college was paid for. But they kind of bent their own rule, which was they didn't usually do van adaptations while someone was in college. But because mine required an internship, they did it for me early. And having a vehicle that I could drive really changed my life, my independence. You think about just in your daily life, if you want to get in the car and drive to the grocery store, you have that ability. Well, until 21 years old, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the ability to just jump in the car and go somewhere where I needed to go, where my life took me, is just huge. And so I still to this day have that van. We're hoping to get a new one soon, but it's a freedom that everyone had experienced usually around 16 years of age or so. And then I never really realized that I would be able to. It just wasn't something that entered my mind until the state announced that it was going to help, and we got therapist from a local hospital came and worked with me, and here I am, know how to drive.
Now, you have married a beautiful woman, Joni.
Absolutely.
And that is such a lovely love story. Tell us how you and Joni got together and how you knew that you wanted to make that commitment to each other to be married.
We first met each other I was in eighth grade and she was in seventh grade, and we met each other in church. Her family moved to our church when we were that age, and it was kind of one of those love at first sight things, and we had one of the immaturest junior high relationships for about 9 months, and then the breakup was so bad, we both don't really remember what happened, but it was so bad that we didn't talk to each other for 3 years. And when I say don't talk to each other, I mean we didn't even say hi when we passed each other in the church hallway, which when you're in church and you don't say hi to somebody, that's a bad breakup. So we went to two separate schools. I went to the University of North Texas, and she went to Oklahoma Christian University in Oklahoma City. And we kind of kept touch, and over the summers with, the friendship mended, but it was nothing more, until we both came home from college. And just started finding ourselves around each other a lot. And she got into a car accident, which totaled her car. And I very I try to say I had no ulterior motive, but I absolutely did. I offered to shuttle her around wherever she needed to go. And my motive was that I got to spend more time with her. So, you know, it worked because the more we got to be around each other, the more we knew that, this was a deeper friendship than either one of us had ever had. And so in the summer of 2004, I was actually on a trip where I was taking a group of people who were in wheelchairs to Walt Disney World, which is what my travel agency specializes in. And I was kind of the host on the tour. My dad went with me. And we were in the hotel room near the end of the trip, and he said something about, well, I'm missing my wife. And my response was, well, I'm missing my friends, too. And he said, one friend in particular? I said, yes. And I knew from that trip, I came home and said, look, I can't do this friend thing anymore. We have to be together forever or, you know, all or nothing. This is the only way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm so glad you said that. Because she had been feeling the same way. And I quizzed her pretty good when we first started dating. And we knew it was going to be that this was either a lifetime, you know, thing or we wouldn't need to date. I mean, both of us were, I was 25 and she was 24, and there was no point in holding out. We knew each other. We had been friends for years. And so I quizzed her pretty good on, you know, there's going to be things that you're going to have to help with in our marriage that not everybody has to help with in their own marriages. And I just want to understand that you know these things are coming so that you're not surprised. And her words back to me were, do you think that if I hadn't already thought that through and been okay with it, that I would have even said yes to dating you? And that was it. I didn't ask her again.
Mm-hmm. And you got married in 2005.
Mm-hmm. It was a very unique ceremony in that neither one of us believe in luck. Because we think that God's in control and you don't need fortune or luck or any of that stuff. And so there were a lot of things in the wedding ceremony that we did differently. We broke a lot of traditions. I actually got to see her on our wedding day before the wedding itself. We had heard from a friend this tip to get everybody out of the room, everybody out of the main sanctuary, and then have the groom go up and wait for his bride, and then his bride comes in with no one else in the room by herself, and then they have about 10 or 15 minutes together to get the emotional part out, you know, because when you see her for the first time in that wedding dress, if you don't well up, something's wrong with you. So we got to talk to each other, we got to get the jitters out, we were able to pray together, and then everybody else came in, and we did pictures and all the other stuff like that. So there were lots of little things like that we did to make it our own, and we've been married now for coming up on 4 years in March, and it's been amazing.
Well, I agree, and you've got a beautiful little girl, Hannah. Your story, Chet, is so inspiring, and it is so heartwarming. It is a story of overcoming obstacles, going through some difficult times, but ending up with the love of your life, and being able to share your life story with people wherever the opportunity presents itself, because you travel all over the country. And what is your website, Chet?
It is happinessbychoice.com.
Happinessbychoice.com.
Or you can just use my name, Chet McDaniel, but McDaniel's hard to spell and remember, so we go with happinessbychoice.com. Because
well,
I believe that if you're going to be happy in life, you have to choose to be happy.
I agree with that. I think it is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very much so. Chet McDaniel, it has been just absolutely wonderful having you as a guest today. Thank you so much for being my show. And again, his website is Happiness by Choice. This wonderful book is titled All He Needs for Heaven by Chet's dad, Jim McDaniel. And if you need the correct spelling of the last name, it's McDoniel. It is a fabulous story. I recommend it highly. Chet, thank you very much again for being my guest, and I wish you continued success, not just in your business, but in every aspect with your wonderful family. And I think it's great you've told your story.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. Join us at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, February 13th through 16th at the LAX Hilton, 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles. We are bringing together cutting-edge speakers including David Icke, Sonia Hoquette, celebrity and musician David Carradine, Daniel Brinkley, George Norrie, Sean David Morton, Vashali, and many more. Visit www.consciouslifeexpo.com. Or call the box office 800-367-5777 for discounted tickets.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Hey, telephone lines are now open. Would you like to chat with me today? I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians and also those of you in the U.S., 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, remember, when you call in, if you're a first-time caller, all you have to do is give me your first name or your initial. And then after that, let me tell you what I perceive. I always like to know what part of the country or the world you're calling in from. That's always fascinating to me. And then what I will do, as I said, is give you information, and you'll be able to ask me a question about anything that you like. And there's no such thing as a dumb question. I tell people that frequently. So many times people think when they talk to me, they have to intellectualize something. No, just ask whatever question you want to ask, and that'll be fine with me. So again, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Or 888-815-9756, 888-815-9756. Those phone lines are now open. Also, I want to follow up. You'll be hearing the ads about the Conscious Life Expo. And this is an event that I am participating in this coming February. And it's a wonderful event. I'm going to not just be speaking there, but I am also going to have a booth, and the booth number is 537. I'll be doing many consultations for people, like I try to do wherever I appear. And it's going to be all for all 3 days. I will be there in complete attendance at that event. So if you want more information, just go to my website. The newsletter is going to be going out within the next couple of days. And all of this information will be in my newsletter, so it will be posted on my website, and you'll have access to that, which is DelphiInternational.com. Or you can, if you want, just call me at my office, and if you want to get specifics, you can do that, too. I'm also going to make a point of being down in the Los Angeles area where people will have an opportunity if they want to meet with me privately. That time will be available also. If you've ever had an experience with a ghost, I have, and I know a number of people that I've talked with through the years that have had also. Well, Giovanni Galati is a man who had one of his own, and I don't know exactly the time frame, but apparently it was in the mid-1980s in Hanover, Germany. He said his family owned a very large apartment house where his entire family, his parents, brothers, and himself, and other employees of the restaurant that his father owned, they all were there. They rented rooms in this large place. And a lot of the people there would talk about the various spooky experiences they had had. And some of the people that worked at his dad's restaurant, after living there for a while, said, enough of this. I don't need any of this stuff. I can't take it anymore. And they left. Well, he said he was always a skeptic. He had never had an experience until one particular night. And this is what happened to him. He said he arrived home very late after work one evening. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and he was so exhausted, he just went right to sleep. Now, it apparently was a few hours later, and he guesses at the time, maybe about 4 or 5 o'clock, and he awakened very abruptly. He said his eyes were just wide open, and when that happened, this is what occurred. He heard a key turn in the lock in his front door of the apartment, and all of his instincts were operating. He tried to get up to see who it was. He lived alone. Nobody else had a key, but he said he couldn't move. He absolutely was totally unable to move. Nothing. Now, he was struggling with this inability of being able to move. He heard footsteps go through the hall in his apartment into the kitchen, and he said, I had wooden floors, and the footsteps were echoing, just like when I'd walk across them. He was doing the same thing. He heard the handle of his bedroom door begin to turn. Then he heard someone, he didn't know what it was, it could have been something, and stand next to the bed that he was sleeping in, and he knew that they were looming over him. But he couldn't turn his head to see who or what was there. He's totally paralyzed. He said he was aware that tears were running down his face, not so much from being frightened as from being frustrated, because he couldn't do anything. Physically, he couldn't move. He said he tried everything he could. He was trying to think things through, anything, just so he could move his body. He said he guesses, he's not sure, but he guesses it was about 10 or 15 minutes that he was in this kind of a paralyzed conditioning. And he felt the energy, he used the word presence, withdraw. He heard footsteps going away from his bed, going towards the door. The door handle, he heard it turn. The door opened and closed. And then he heard the echo of whoever was walking retreat back through the kitchen, going right down the hall, and back out the front door of his apartment. As soon as that front door closed, he was able to move. So what do you think he did? He jumped up out of bed. He found his key, ran out of the bedroom, and he said he could still hear the footsteps descending the inner stairwell of the apartment building. as he was going towards his own apartment door, and he heard the outside door of the building slam shut, and here he is, he's running down the stairs and out the main door, and he couldn't see a soul. He ran down a path that was right there at the apartment building, looked right and left, got to the street, couldn't see a thing. Nobody was out there. Not only that, but fresh snow had fallen, and there was no mark and no footprint of where anyone had been on the path or on the porch. Ooh, sort of spooky, huh? I know one of my vivid, there are a couple of experiences that I've had, but one of my vivid experiences was I was living in Eagle Rock, California, and my daughter, who was about, 10 or 11 years old at the time, she was asleep in the bedroom and I was asleep in the living room. And it happened that I was sound asleep for a long period of time, and I was awakened suddenly, like this gentleman was. And I got up, and I had not turned the light on, but there was a very full moon, and I started to go from where I was, which was in the living room, into the kitchen. And I got icy cold all of a sudden, and I turned to my left, and I could see the front door of the small house that we were living in, and there was this tall man with this big Russian hat on, and he had on a heavy fur coat, a full-length fur coat, this Russian hat, and he walked from the living room door to the kitchen door area and then disappeared. And it was just a few minutes after midnight, and I was just absolutely amazed. And my thought often still has been, I don't know who he was, have no idea why he decided to visit that evening, but it was most memorable. Now, I wasn't frozen, but after that experience, I can remember just standing and going, ooh, and just sort of shivering a little bit. This is a number of years ago. But it is something that when you have experiences like that, anybody that says to you, it's your imagination, they're nuts. They don't know what they're talking about. These are unique experiences that when they occur, they really do leave an impression with you. And I'll tell you what, Giovanni, I can understand how you felt, because I've had experiences where I was aware of people and I couldn't move either. And part of that is you're in this altered state. And I learned about that a little bit. Maybe I'll share that with you another time. But anyway, I just wanted to give you that story because I thought it was a fascinating one. And, maybe you've got a special story you'd like to share with me. I'd love to hear about it because it is a real experience. And unless you've had it, you just do not know what it is. And so I never laugh at anybody that talks about their ghostly experiences. We have neighbors that have shared with us a number of different experiences that they have had just in our local neighborhood. Apparently this was an area that was occupied by some native groups, and it was also very much the area that I live in was very much active with logging activities at one time. So there's all kinds of stories. We even have places of business in this area that are known for their hauntings. So we live in a pretty cool area of the country, and it's always fun to share these stories with different people because it's amazing how when one person starts telling a story, everybody else has something to share. It's really fun. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756 for U.S. and Canadians. Donald Wright made a small poem. He said, evergreens, their branches laden with pine cones, the sun shimmering across fields of cottony snow. Winter has a beauty all its own. Oh, I couldn't agree more. It's just absolutely glorious when in winter. But our snow has gone away. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, I got a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'll share it with you. So don't go away. Oh, by the way, we've got a wonderful guest coming on tomorrow, Jessica Bann, psychic surgery and faith healing. Do you believe it? Well, whether you do, whether you don't. I think you'll still find it interesting. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Interested in UFOs, the paranormal, predictions, prophecies, and psychics? Then join us along with David Icke, Sean David Morton, Jim Mars, Richard Hoagland, Daniel Brinkley, Sonia Coquette, and many more at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo and Film Festival, February 13th to 16th at the LAX Hilton. Call the box office at 1-800-367-5777 or visit ConsciousLifeExpo.com for more information and discounted tickets.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Wanted to share a few tips with you. By the way, if you wanted to give me a buzz, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. One of the challenges that we have with water pollution today are medical substances, I should say prescription substances, that are going into water. Now, lots of times, we just never, ever gave a consideration to that. If we had excess medications in our medicine cabinet or something like that, we would just put it down the toilet. We didn't give a thought to it because that was often considered the safest way to be able to get rid of medicines. Well, there are some locations where now, like in the state of Virginia, I was told they have a law that you are not to pour medications down the toilet or down the sink anymore because it pollutes the water. And a few years back, Germany did a research study, and they were astonished at the amount of narcotics that were in the water flow that people were drinking. And they said, this is just not good at all. So it presented a new challenge. How do you filter it out? But more importantly, how do you educate your populace so that they do not put stuff down into the water system? Well, there is a new bit of information that came across my desk that I thought you might be interested in. If you have old medications, rather than throwing them away or flushing them down the toilet, which obviously pollutes the water system, donate the medication to the Starfish Project. Now, I had never heard of this, so I just think this is wonderful information. Now, what they do, they collect these medications, and apparently they check them out to see if they're still valuable or useful. And then it is sent to, they are sent to clinics in Nigeria. And the reason it's called the Starfish Project, it is based on the story of a child throwing one of hundreds of washed up starfish back into the sea. When asked what difference it could make, the child replies, it makes a difference to this one. Now, they only utilize apparently certain medications. Some antibiotics, vitamins, pain relievers, and antihistamines are accepted. Now, if you might have some old medications and you'd like to find out if they could be useful to this organization, For a complete list and to find drop-off sites or to get labels that pay for shipping your meds, then this is the number you call, 212-746-7164. That's 212-746-7164. Or you can go to the web and you can go to thestarfishproject.org. Thestarfishproject.org and click on donating medication. Donating medication. And I think that this is something that can be extremely valuable. Now, I don't know, and maybe you will know, of some other organizations that perhaps will take used medical supplies, or not used medical supplies, but medical supplies that perhaps are outdated or they are not up to the latest that may be available to physicians in the United States. And I knew a woman who for years was contacting dentists and physicians that she had come to know, and they would give her their supplies that they no longer really wanted to work with. And she took them to Russia at a time when they just weren't able to get anything at all. And she had a network of people, and she'd get it to them. And she had doctors in the former Soviet Union that just thanked her and all of the people that assisted her to get them in. They actually had to smuggle them in because they didn't even have materials to do fillings. So there are many places in the world where being able to utilize what maybe we feel is outdated or we're not using anymore, this is something that's a very good idea. So I just wanted to share that with you in case you might be interested in it. Also, I wanted to share a couple of other little minor facts here. When you're on the Internet and you are surfing the web, are you aware that when you're doing that, you're actually doing a brain exercise? It's not a bad thing to do. It's amazing, and the research that is being done on the brain, and this one area of research is being done by UCLA, that the brain scans that they have done on people that are using the Internet, like a library or trying to gain resources, the brain is developing new connections within it, and it helps to keep you sharp, focused, and mentally agile. So no matter what your age, utilizing your computer, utilizing the Internet, utilizing computer games, various aspects of technology really help to keep the brain. It's like giving the brain exercise. And then last but not least, I wanted to share with you that people apparently have been getting a rash on their faces, and they have been just totally perplexed as to why they have it. Maybe they've never had a skin problem before. Well, they have found that it is being caused by the material cell phones are made of. Apparently, more women than men, millions of them, are allergic to nickel, and this is a metal in the casing and menu buttons of many of the cells. Now, this is according to the British Association of Dermatologists. How to fix this? Well, you're not going to give up your cell phone, obviously. They say get the speakerphone option or get a plastic or rubber cell phone cover, and it's only about $10. And you can go to a website, EliteExtreme.com. But what an interesting thing. Who would have thought you'd get a facial rash from your cell phone? Just goes to show you, we never know until we have things affect us enough that somebody checks it out, finds out what it is. So if you have a skin irritation and you're using your cell phone a lot, that may be the reason. Just get a little cover for it and you'll be fine. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't be afraid to explore. Don't be afraid to reach for the stars, because you're going to have an adventure regardless. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.